picture a woman with eyes of fire and fangs like a wild boar just appearing in the middle of a desert to divide an empire.
Right. It sounds exactly like a fantasy novel.
It really does. But this is actually how the very first history of the American Southwest begins. We're looking at Gaspar Pérez de Villagra's Historia de la Nueva México, which is a 1610 epic poem written by a soldier who was, well, actually there.
Yeah.
But, I mean, you have to wonder, why would someone record a military expedition in verse? It feels like an odd choice for a history book.
It does seem strange to us now, yeah.
Yeah.
But, you know, in the 17th century, epic poetry was really the ultimate power move.
Mm-hmm.
Villagra wasn't just writing a poem for fun.
He was building a case, right.
Exactly. He was crafting a legal and social argument for the Spanish court.
Mm-hmm.
By using verse, he was framing the colonization of New Mexico as this heroic, almost divine mission.
Oh, wow.
Which, you know, is essential for securing status and funding. And he starts with that monstrous woman, basically a demon,
mm-hmm.
to establish this sort of mythic GPS for the land.
Right, the mythic GPS. Because she essentially tells these two brothers to split up, which leads one toward what becomes Mexico City and the other to stay up in the north.
Yes, and Villagra even mentions this great pillar of iron at exactly 27.5 degrees latitude that supposedly served as the boundary.
Wait, an iron pillar in the desert? To you or me, that sounds like a campfire story, but for the Spaniards, this was an actual legal claim.
Oh, absolutely. They were completely convinced the Aztecs originally came from the north. So by finding these landmarks, they were essentially saying, you know, we're not just exploring, we're reclaiming what's already ours.
It's like a supernatural border dispute. I mean, if you found a massive iron monument out there, would you take it as a sign from God or a warning to turn back?
Right.
But that mythic confidence kind of hits a wall when Villagra addresses the actual history of the region.
Yeah, specifically the failures of earlier explorers like Coronado. Villagra is notoriously brutal toward Coronado's 1540 expedition. He basically labels them cowards for retreating.
I have to jump in here because that seems incredibly unfair. I mean, Coronado's men were starving. And didn't he literally suffer a traumatic brain injury after falling off his horse?
He did, yeah. The expedition completely collapsed after that.
Right. So calling them cowards because they didn't find gilded soups and cakes in the desert feels like a really low blow. Was Villagra just, I don't know, a jerk? Or was there a tactical reason to trash the competition?
Well, it was purely tactical. Think about it. If Coronado failed because the land was just a barren wasteland, then the crown wouldn't want to spend another dime there.
Oh, that makes perfect sense.
Right. But if Coronado failed because he lacked grit, then a new, tougher leader could still go in and find the riches. Villagra had to frame the previous explorers as failures of character to make his boss look like the necessary hero.
To make Juan de Oñate look good. So Oñate wasn't just a soldier. He was basically a venture capitalist for the crown.
Exactly. A venture capitalist.
Yeah.
By the time we get to his contract in August 1595, he's negotiated this adelantado title.
Which meant he was personally on the hook for the costs, right? Because the crown was broke.
Yeah, they essentially outsourced imperialism. Oñate was betting his entire family fortune on the hope of finding silver and converting souls.
Wow.
It was the ultimate high-stakes gamble. I mean, the motto of the era was plus ultra, meaning further beyond. And Oñate took that literally. He wasn't just leading a troop of soldiers.
He was moving a small city. We're talking 83 wagons and thousands of head of livestock pushing into this unknown.
But as they're pushing into that unknown territory, Villagra lets a very strange detail slip into his poem.
Yeah, this is the part of our exploration into the source material that really stopped me. He mentions hearing rumors of people white, as in Castile and people of Guinea, already living in these remote northern lands.
Long before the Spaniards officially arrived.
Right. If you're the listener, you have to ask, wait, I thought this was a discovery mission.
It blows the official narrative wide open, honestly. It suggests that the Southwest wasn't a vacant wilderness, but a globalized crossroads long before Oñate's wagons ever creaked across the Rio Grande.
It really does. Villagra was trying to write a story about firsts, but his own lines admit that the Spaniards were actually late to the party.
Yeah, they were far from the first ones there.
It makes you realize that what we call frontier history is often just the moment someone finally brought a pen to a place where everyone else was already busy living.
That is a great way to put it.
So as you think about those 83 wagons rolling into the dust, consider this. If there are already people from Europe and Africa living in the New World before the official explorers arrived, whose history are we actually walking through? Who else was there, and why did their stories get left out of the poem?